The best way to ask for trouble is to have a conflict of wills with God. Now, we know that I, God, has a will which says, be ye perfect. And in order to be ye perfect, you must acknowledge me in all thy ways. And therefore, any time you're too busy to acknowledge the I of your being everywhere, you are in conflict with the will of God. And if you do not recognize this, you will be acknowledging a neighbor that is unfriendly. You will be acknowledging a neighbor in the area that you don't quite approve of. You will be acknowledging many things around you when you should be acknowledging I is all that is there. And this conflict of wills is the human karma. It's like electricity. It's there, and we all have access to it, but not on our terms, on its terms. If we decide that we have a will of our own about electricity, we find it very shocking. God's will is very specific. It must function itself. There's no one individual who can stand up and say to God's will, this way, please, or that way, please. It's as completely impartial and uninfluenced as electricity, but available to all, and we have no right to remove it from anyone. Now, this conflict of wills eliminated brings us into one will. And, of course, in order to be out of the conflict of wills, I must have no will other than to do the will of I. Now let's look at the chapter and see what Joel has given us as a way of life in which we take dominion. Not by our great intelligence or our strength or our superiority, but by learning to remove the conflict of wills between I, the Father, and me, the person, so that the only will functioning is the will of the Father expressing as I, the self which is the Father. It is the will of the Father that I and the Father be one. It is the will of the Father that I call no man on earth my Father. It is the will of the Father that I call no man God. And so I cannot call Jesus God. I cannot deify an individual. I cannot worship an individual. The only place I can worship in the will of the Father is to recognize that I, the substance of my being, is God. My identity is God. That's how you worship. And beside the I of my being, there is no other. The fidelity to this one divine being, which is you everywhere, is the will of God. Beside me, there is no other one. And when you have accepted that infinite one to be yours, yourself, and then trust it to be itself, and do not interfere with the human resentments, the human conditioning, the human concepts, then you are in the will. Now, let's nail it down. God is being, but not a being. God is being you and being me. Now, if God is being you and being me, are we different? If God is one and the same, can God be a different here than a different there? Can God over where you are be different than God over where I am? Or is it not the one self? And therefore, if God is being God's self here and there, what is here but God's self? And if God is being God's self where you are, what is there but God's self? And if they are the same God's self, are we not one and the same? But appear to be different through human sense perception? If God is I and God is where you are, isn't the name of you I? And if God is I and God is where I am, isn't the name of me I? And if I is one and the same, where I am, are you not there? Where you are, am I not there? Are we not the same individual? The same infinite being. And this is the whole idea. This is why it escapes the world and why it's for the few. This is why it's so narrow. I am the life of you. And the I of you is the life of me. And that means there's no me and there's no you. There's just the I. And it is the will of the Father that you live in that recognition. I am the life of everyone I see. The life of you is the life of everyone you see. Do you see the liberation that is there? The incredible truth? The life of everyone you see is the life of you. Not as an abstract idea. You literally are there where that individual appears to be. And that you that is there is the life of God. And your awareness of that multiplies the Lord. Even though it is fantastic to the human mind, it is the fact of God. And so you never, never, never are in a place where you are outside yourself, and there is no outside to yourself. That's why there's no external world to the I that you are. Personalizing God by accepting Jesus as the only Christ, meaning the only I, pulls down the veil. The personalizing of spirit is the veil. You're looking at spirit. Don't personalize it. Impersonalize the person and accept the spirit that is there. And you're lifting the veil. And then know that spirit that is there is your spirit. Spirit is your creator, and spirit is your being. Now, on page 62, you'll find this statement. When God has been thoroughly impersonalized, the meaning of omnipresence will be clear. Everywhere, take away the person, and you've got omnipresence of I, spirit. We have set up a sense of separation from God, even while declaring God is omnipresence. But where am I in that omnipresence? If God is omnipresence, then I must be that presence. But if I'm going to have a God and a me, too, then I'm not impersonalizing. I'm setting up a sense of separation. I have a God as omnipresence only if I am omnipresence. The practicing of that consciousness that I am omnipresent. You can't find a place where I am not. If you go down to the bottom of the sea, I am there. If you go up to the very topmost cloud and above, I am there. That must be your consciousness of the nature of your being. Page 62, I, the creative principle of this universe, is not localized in the Holy Land, 2,000 years ago. But I is the illumined consciousness. Your entire life depends on knowing the nature of God. And you will never know Him aright until you know Him as I, the Spirit of God in you. Here's Isaiah, who had caught all this. Everyone that thirsteth, he says in chapter 55, come ye to the waters. And he that hath no money, come ye, buy and eat. Yea, come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Then we go down to the realization of the fullness of I. And you see it in his 12th verse in that 55th chapter. For ye shall go out with joy and be led forth with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing. Why would they do that? Because they're not there. You have caught that behind those mountains, behind those hills, where they appear to be, that isn't what's there at all. I am. And this awareness is what he means by the mountains and the hills that break out singing. Suddenly it's all you, and you know it. It's an experience. It's not a mountain. It's the infinite invisible spirit appearing to human sense as a mountain. It's not a forest. It's not a river. It's not a world. It's the infinite invisible spirit appearing to human sense as the things we think we're looking at. And when you feel that, you have found your infinite eye. And the world will break out singing to you, and you will be in the joy of I realized. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree, and it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. The realization of I everywhere changes every thorn, changes every problem, changes every false belief. Suddenly it's all the perfect I. And that realization dissolves the imperfection of the senses. Now, infinity then is God, and infinity is I. And as you practice this knowledge, you will reach the place of realization. In which the mountains will clap, the trees will clap, the world will exult in your consciousness. For you will see through the mist of what never was. When you know the secret of I, it says on page 65 of Mystical I, you abide in stillness and you let I do its work. You need no thoughts, since you cannot enlighten I, God. And all that the illumined consciousness then has to do is to abide in God, I, and God meets your needs. You transfer no thoughts to anyone. You know how we like to transfer thoughts to people. We think maybe if we think a good thought, they'll pick it up. No, we don't do that in the I consciousness. We recognize that where that person is, I am. And that's all there is to it. Everywhere that person appears, only the I of you is there. The I of you where you stand, the I of you where the person is where you rest. And then I will do the work. Now, if they on the other end, in a human consciousness, are not reaching to you, they cannot receive I. But if they have reached to you, they will receive I. And I will reveal the perfection of being. That's why you must be asked for your help. That's the reaching to I. They think they're reaching to you, but they're reaching for the I of their own being. And as they reach to you, they're reaching for I. And the I of you responds by standing fast. Then the I of you, which is the I of them, becomes active in their consciousness and appears as what they call their healing. Remember, they must be reaching to you. Or else, there is no opening the door to I. Understanding the nature of God as I is the treasure. But only when you impersonalize can you become still inside and let I do the work. So that if there's a me here trying to be still, nothing's going to happen. It's the knowledge that there is no me here. There's only I. And then me will be still. There's no me over there. There's only I. If I have an I here and a me there, I've got a problem too. If I is here and no me, then I is there and no him. And now, if I can accept this, know the truth of it, believe it to be so, I can be still. And it will be so because it is. Do you see how we build our own world of I? That's all there is. And wherever you're accepting something else, you're accepting non-existence. Only the I of you is everywhere and nothing else. That's the extreme limit of the purity of heart, which opens the kingdom for us. When only I am everywhere, I am in the kingdom of God. When there is no evil, no problem, no physicality, no mortality, no materiality, when I know that all is I have found the kingdom of God on earth. When the Spirit says, it is my good pleasure to give you the kingdom, it is saying, I am the kingdom. I and the kingdom are one and the same. When you find the I of your being everywhere, you have found the kingdom. So build your network of I, day by day. Start where you are. You don't have to wait for a person to call you at all. Start where you are and work out. Who's the next person to you? That's I. Practice it until it means something. Until you can feel that it's true. Until you know it's true. Until signs follow to show you have reached the realization of it. And really, if you find it with one, you have found it with everyone. Because now you can sit back, and no matter where the eye reaches, that land I give unto you. No matter where you see form, if you know it is I, you have found the secret. And it must yield its harvest. There's a place in this chapter where there's another problem about supply, and Joel writes a person and says, you think your problem is supply, but it really isn't. And he sums it up this way. He says, what you really have is not a problem of supply, but a sense of separation from God. God is supply. God is the allness. And therefore, if you're not aware of that allness, you're in a sense of separation from God. And so your problem isn't that you don't have supply, it's that you're separated in your consciousness from the source which is the supply. And now that separation constitutes your belief that you are another self than God. That's the sense of separation, setting up a separate selfhood when God is the only self. So when you say, I don't have this, you're saying, I'm in a selfhood which is not God's self. And your problem isn't that you don't have this. Your problem is that you think you're in a selfhood which is not God's self. Every problem is a statement that I am not God's self. And the revelation of Christ is that you are God's self. And the adjustment then is, I do not have this problem. I am God's self. God's self doesn't have the problem. That's a great mountain to carry at first. And even those who begin to do that, think of this I, you know, this I in me. Forgetting everyone else, but it's the I in me. And that's why they've got this mountain to carry. There is no I in me. I is me. There is no me, there's just I. It's not in me. It is me. And it's not in her, it is her. I is standing there, not her. I is standing here, not me. There is no I in me and I in her. There is only I. And I is invisible. And this infinite I that is all there is invisible. I am that infinite I which is invisible. And it will not be visible to a mortal being. It is only visible to itself. Now, when I set up this visible self and call it the child of God, I'm only fooling myself. I is never a visible human being. I is always the infinite invisible Christ. And when I have a problem in this physical self, which I accept, I am stating that I am not the invisible I, Christ of God. Unless I'm willing to turn from that and rest in the consciousness that this invisible Christ I am, which is everywhere, I'm not going into prison to the least of these my brethren. I'm not recognizing the universality of my being. I cannot protect this finger if I let go of the whole arm. I cannot protect this me if I let go of the whole self. I must acknowledge the whole self to protect what appears to be even a portion of it. I am not man. I am I. I am not in this body. This body, then, says Joel, has the same relationship to you that your automobile has. And unless you're thinking in terms of why, that's a pretty awkward phrase for you. This body is an instrument for your use, and when you are through with it, you will find yourself with a new one. You are not in that body, he says. You are consciousness. Infinite divine consciousness. And there we have the meaning then of I. Infinite divine consciousness is I. And that is the infinite divine body. And you cannot be any part of it or any fraction of it because it is infinite. It has no parts and no fractions. It is one. Because I am the Father of one, I am as omnipresent as God, or there would be two. There would be one infinite one and one finite one. But if I am the Father of one, then I am omnipresent. And finally, on page 68, the lion and the lamb will lie down together. When we recognize that I is universal being, infinite being, and then we will make friends of our enemies. We will not be overcoming them, but instead we will be recognizing that I, in the midst of the enemy, am in the midst of each one of us, and that we are all one I. This is the impersonalization, then, that has to be done in consciousness. You do it in your quiet time. You impersonalize the world. You impersonalize the animal kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, the human kingdom. All in your quiet time, so that when you go forth and meet that which you have impersonalized, you're prepared to know it as it is instead of as it appears to be. And through this process, you find you're becoming alive to the spirit of being. The outer form begins to almost feel like it might be a shell that you're going to drop off. That new inner aliveness. All of your outer recognition of I brings an interesting response right where you stand. You become very quickened. Don't be disheartened if at first you find you're rather stymied in doing this, because it isn't easy, but it does yield to your constant endeavor to understand and to feel the I-ness of your being everywhere. It does yield. And when you least think about it, it begins to do for you what you had been trying to do. You see, you're coming into new capacities, a new self. It's not at all like the old self. It's free. And the strangeness continues for quite a while. It even brings out ailments in you that you didn't know you had. And sometimes that's a sign of spiritual progress. Because all of the impurities in consciousness come to the surface when you begin to know I everywhere. They come, but they go, and they don't return. They're burned out forever. Don't be surprised if you get an ache and a pain. Don't be surprised at all. It may not even be an impurity. It could be just another spiritual traveler leading you along the way with a sign. Now we're moving into the unusual part of this work in the second half of the book. We're impersonalizing error, and then we come to I speaks. And we want to move through this book with a full understanding of what the mystical I is. How the mystical I works. What you can expect of it. And how you must learn to expect only it if you wish to see it functioning everywhere for you. There'll be some surprises. Be prepared. Thanks very much.